Okay, so we're 7 words in on the second last line of Tetvav Amud Bet, doing Tet Zion today. Let's change our little fancy sticker over here. I don't think I ever got to do this before. This is highly exciting.
Dun, dun, dun. Wait, we have to auction it off. Oh, it's a keyboard. So, wait.
I'll make a donation. Yeah. Okay, I might need some help today. I prepared this stuff quite late at night, and it's a little all over the place, so I might need your help. Okay, Rabbi Akiva, so what we've been learning so far, meaning last time I taught you was only 2 daf ago, we introduced this, we introduced the Maisa Merkava, right, Arba, the 4 who went into the Pardes. It seems like, you tell me, you must have spent a whole daf talking about the whole thing about going into the Pardes. Seems like at least the people who made it today are still alive. who knows about the rest of the people who, maybe something happened to them. But we're finishing off with the very last sentence. We know that it worked out for 1 of 4, 25% success rate. Right, Rabbi Akiva was okay. And what we still learn now about Rabbi Akiva, Allah, b'shalom v'yara b'shalom. He went up, whatever that means, b'shalom, in peace, and he came down in peace. How do we know? Right, it's v'alava kasuv omer, and the Torah, the pasuk says about him, pasuk says, and they apply it retroactively to him, mashchini acharecha narutza. Right, draw after me, and we will run after you. V'af Rabbi Akiva bikshu malchei sharas ledochafo, and even Rabbi Akiva, when he was a little scared, he was a little nervous, he was a little in danger. Right, the angels wanted to get rid of him. They wanted to push him away. They wanted to dachuf. They wanted to push him. Amar lahem haKodesh Baruch Hu, but God said, "Hinuchu lezaken zeh." No, let this elder, let this zaken, in a positive way, let him be, let him stay. Why? Sharai lihishtamesh bichvodi, for he is deserving to use lihishtamesh, whatever that means, to use my honor. I cannot tell you. I have a full translation of this, or know exactly what it means, but those are what the words say. My darash. So now the Gemara is a question. We're on top of Tet Zayin. Amud Aleph. My Darash. Right, what exactly did Rabbi Akiva Doresh, what did he expound upon? What was his drasha that he knew how to avoid getting kicked out, doing anything bad in there, perhaps specifically looking at a place he wasn't supposed to look? Right, Rashi says in the very Torah, Rashi, Mehechan hevin makom hashchina shenizhar shelo hitzitz sham. Right, how did Rashi know, how did Rabbi Akiva know what to look at to avoid, getting himself into trouble? And so the Gemara answers, Amar Rabba Barchana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. The pasuk says, "Va'ata mirvavos kodesh." Right? Again, different ways to translate this pasuk. Va'ata. The approach. You approach. We approach God. Right? Ata is approached. With the holy myriad, with his whole holy chevra, right? With all the holy angelic beings. What did Rabbi Akiva learn from that pasuk? Os hu birvavas shalom. The God is represented as a symbol, as an os, amongst this whole holy chevra, amongst this whole meravavos kodesh, right? What exactly that means? So Rashi says, Rashi answers this question, that how did Rabbi Akiva know that there would be a special spot where he shouldn't look at? So an os is something that stood out to him, as a special point. Again, this is a little anthropomorphic, like we said last time, but there was some sort of point that God, quote-unquote, was, and Rabbi Akiva knew not to look over there.
Why don't you just answer Rabbi Akiva?
That's a good question.
That would be too simple.
I mean, I guess
you guys are telling us what.
These are the Achronim.
They were after him. That's,
These are.
It was all handed down.
These are Amoraim, and Rabbi Akiva is a Tana, so I guess they're discussing it later. That's the first shita. Rav Abahu Amar Dagol Mirvava. Right, we know Dagol Mirvava is the name of a parish on the Shulchan Aruch, but here it really comes from a pasuk. Right, Dagol Mirvava, kind of a complicated word, right? That the preeminent above this Mirivavot, Mirvava, Mirivavot, same Lashon, this whole Chevra, this holy Chevra, that what exactly does that mean? Then Rabbi Akiva knew that this whole group was an example of Hashem's multitude, and he somehow knew where not to look. Again, I don't have 100% clarity in this. Dugma hu b'revava shalo, right? That Hashem is represented by the likeness of this mirvav, this myriad of holiness. Reish Lakish amar Hashem tzvakot shemo, right? The God is the master of the legions. Hashem tzvakot is his name. Adon hu b'tzava shalo, that God is the ruler, is the master of this army. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, right? So they said that Rabbi Akiva's makor, that his source in the Torah, was the following passage, was the following source, right? We know the story of Eliyahu, Hanavi, Bahar Carmel, right? The whole thing with the people there and the Mizbachot. And then afterwards, actually, I think this is a different story, where he's looking for God, he's out in the wilderness, and the Pasuk says there that there's a great and powerful wind, and smashing mountains, and breaking rocks, and they all went before Hashem, right? And what? And then God tells Eliyahu Hanavi, Lo beruach Hashem, right? I'm not in the wind, va'achar ruach harash, and after the wind came an earthquake, or there's all these great natural things, and God keeps telling Eliyahu, I'm not in this, I'm not in this, I'm not in this. Mm-hmm. Right after that came an earthquake, and then God tells Eliyahu, quote, Lo barash Hashem, I'm not in the noise, not in the earthquake. V'achar rash esh, after the earthquake there was fire, and then God told Eliyahu and Avi, I'm not in the fire, Lo ba'esh Hashem, and afterwards, ha'esh kol d'mama daka. Right, but afterwards, the famous line, that after the fire there was a small, thin, small voice, and Vahina Hashem over. And God tells Eli Navi, I'm in this very quiet, very small voice. Again, for a little bit of cryptic statements, a lot more to open up over here, but that is relevant to this somehow. I guess it's somehow proving the fact that to a certain extent, again, I don't know how exactly to say this, because obviously God is everywhere, God is everything, but to a certain extent, God is more one place than the other, more in the small voice than in the earthquake, than the Aish, more in one point of this mervavot than the other. And Rabbi Akiva knew how not to look at that more intense place.
May I take a crack?
Sure.
I kind of get the impression that this is saying that God is nowhere where you say he is, so to speak. In other words, don't assume that God is here. Don't assume God is there. Where you think he is, that's not the spot. In other words, to build on the idea of that it's so ethereal, that is so not really definable, don't try and define the undefinable. And I think that that's what Rabbi Akiva understood.
Yeah, but that's a little, I mean, I don't know, we don't want to sit in the philosophy here, but that's a little troubling. Like, you know, we want to say,
why? Why is it so troubling?
Because God is everywhere and God is nowhere.
Yeah,
meaning God is
exactly.
God.
So, exactly. That's the point.
So, okay.
That's it.
You'll study this next time with more of a Kabbalist and you'll come back and tell me. a little more clarity. The Gemara now mentions, right, the Gemara earlier, what you learned last time. Luis, want to just see if one of someone's at the door? It sounded like someone.
I'll tickle.
Maybe it's Joey or someone.
All right.
Maybe
he
Oren.
Has his code, doesn't
so
he?
Maybe it's Oren or someone. Oh, thank fine. You. The Gemara earlier had mentioned that Acher, right, we know Acher did not do so well when he went up to the parties, that he had the Gemara had said that Acher had heard an announcement, quote-unquote, from behind the partition, right? Me'achorei, from behind, whatever that means. So now the Gemara goes through a lengthy brisa that has one point relevant to this conversation. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught us in a brisa. Shisha Dvarim Ne'emru B'Shedim. There are six characteristics that were said about Shadim. Shadim, some sort of angelic demons, right? An angelic being that is not so good. Shlosha kemalachei asharis, v'shlosha kivnei adam. Okay, so Lewis, we're just saying that we're doing a new brisa that says that there were six things that were said about Shadim.
Uh-huh.
And three things are good that make Shadim closer to good angels, malachei asharis, and make three things that make these Shadim closer to us, kivnei adam. So what are they? Right, there are three characteristics that make Shadim more like angels. What are they? Yesh lahem knafim kemalchei asharis. The angels have wings, like the ministering angels. V'tasin misofa olam v'ad sofo kemalchei asharis. The demons can fly. They can tas, like, you know, like tisa, ni'ima, as they say in Alal. That demons can fly from one end of the world all the way to the other, like angels. V'yonin mash'asi lios kemalchei asharis. And the Shadim know the future. Just like the angels know the future, the Malachei Asharis know the future as well. That's a great idea. That they know the future as well, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what's being said here. The good things. The Gemara before goes ahead and says the other three things. The Gemara is bothered. The Gemara says the Yodin Salkadaitcha. Is it really true that you think that angels, that these Shadim know the future? Right? Even the angels don't know the future. Only Hashem knows the future. What do you mean the angels know the future? Ela shomin me'acharei hapargod kemalchei asharis. No, just like the malachei asharis, just like these good angels, hear from behind the partition. Like the minister we talked about before, how Rabbi Akiva, the reason we're saying this is because Acher said that he heard something from quote unquote Me'achari HaPargod, from behind the partition, so too these Malchei Sharis hear from behind the partition, and so too the Shadim can hear from behind the partition, but they don't hear what's going to happen in the next 200, 300, 400 years. Rather, they somehow hear what's going to happen in the next like few minutes. They're kind of they're clued into the immediate future, but not anything past that. Okay. And in three ways they are like human beings. I'm just gonna order my notes here if I skipped anything. Shloshim b'nei Adam. Why? Ochlim v'shloshim k'nei Adam. They eat and drink like human beings. Parin v'ravin k'nei Adam. Right? They have children. They're fruitful, multiply like human beings. Umesim k'nei Adam. And they die like people. Okay. Now we go on. Shisha dvarim ne'emru b'nei Adam. So before we go on, so what's this whole deal about angels? And I can't say I really understand it again, but it brings to mind the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, in the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avos, right at the, it talks about all the things that were created right at the end of Ma'aseh Bereishis, right? That right, basically, in Bein HaShemashos, the Mishnah says, Hashem created all these things, right? He almost like ran out of time, you know, just like Bein HaShemashos, like, you know, Erev Shabbos, we're all rushing right till the end, there's a million things to do at the last second. God is no different. There's a million things for God to do at the last second, right before Shabbos came in. And so one of the things it says there is that God created the Mezikin, right? And the Mezikin are like these evil, bad, whatever, dangerous angels. And the Bar Tanura there says that after Hashem had made Adam and Chava, that's when God created the Shadim, or Mezikin, same type of thing. But the Bar Tanura explains, for whatever this means, that God made the spiritual side, but God ran out of time to make their physical bodies. And therefore, they never got physical bodies, and they just remained these type of Shadim. So that to a certain extent, that these Shadim are more connected to the physical world than perhaps the Malachi Sharis, because they were supposed to have
really,
bodies.
How do we really define Shadim as opposed to Malachim? I mean, is it like a, is it another word, like a synonym for it?
Well, I guess it's a more evil black the bad version of it.
Okay.
I guess here's the way they're similar, here's the way they're different.
Okay.
Shisha dvarim ne'emru b'bnei Adam. There are six characteristics that are said regarding human beings. In three ways, shlosha k'malchei sharis, three ways we're like angels. Shlosha k'behemah, in three ways we're like animals. Once we're talking about sixes, here's another six. Shlosha k'malchei sharis. Right, how are we like, how are people like angels? Yesh lahem das k'malchei sharis. We have understanding, we have intellect. Right? And we stand erect on 2 feet, as opposed to animals who walk on all fours and our bellies facing the ground. We don't. We stand straight. And number three, right? And thank God, we're able to speak Hebrew like the angels. It's interesting. Why does the Mishnah say?
Interesting.
Why doesn't the Mishnah just say that we speak? Right? We speak all languages. Right? Why does it say the Dafka we speak?
Specify that.
Right? Why does it specifically say that we say Lashon HaKodesh? But it says Lashon HaKodesh, though.
Yeah.
But it's referring to man, not to say.
Right, so that's more problematic. It should say, and it just says we speak. Midaber, right? Because people halfway across the world don't speak Hebrew. Interesting. Why is, I don't have a great answer for you. Why is it called Lashon HaKodesh? Why is Hebrew called that? There's a machlok between the Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam writes it's called Lashon HaKodesh, right? A beautiful, holy language, because there's no quote-unquote dirty words. In biblical Hebrew, there's no curse words, even words for intimate things, right? Like there's no specific words for that kind of stuff. You know, there's no dirty words. That's what the Rambam writes, and the Ramban says no. The Ramban says that the world was created with Lashon HaKodesh. Right? God spoke whatever that means. God spoke Hebrew, and therefore the world's created. That Nevuah is in Hebrew, and therefore that's why it's called Lashon HaKodesh. And just to go back for a second, Rav Kamenetsky writes, there's a famous machlokas between the Rambam and the Gra about Shadim. Right, basically the Rambam, every time the Gemara speaks about Mezikin and Shadim, the Rambam says these things don't exist. The Gra goes crazy at the Rambam. It says, okay, you want to tell me they don't exist, besides the fact that I don't think you're wrong from a Kabbalah and stuff, how do you make sense of all these Gemaras? What's the Gemara talking about if they don't exist? So the Rambam doesn't really answer that. I mean, the Gra obviously lived after the Rambam, so he couldn't really respond. But Rav Kamenetsky writes that maybe we have this idea in other places as well. We have this idea in Shas in a different context, that maybe they used to exist, but they no longer exist. Right? He said that we have this idea that the greater the koach of Tuma, the greater the koach of Tahara. So the more Tuma there is, the more Tahara this is, right? So perhaps as we got lower in spirituality, perhaps the things that are against spirituality get lower as well. So perhaps the Shadim, maybe you can explain the Rambam, that Shadim were wiped out when we became lower spiritual beings. Or you have this idea, when they prayed to get rid of Avodah Zarah, right? And they got rid of the Koach of Avodah Zarah, and then chickens weren't laying eggs. That somehow, right, that those things were connected, that the drive for sexuality was connected to the drive for Avodah Zarah, and so when they completely got rid of Avodah Zarah in the world, then there was no more drive for sexuality, so then they had to bring some of it back. And the Gemara, well, maybe eventually, at a slow pace, you'll get to every Gemara.
Usually one goes up, one
sunny
goes
side
down,
eggs.
One goes down, one goes up.
No, I guess the idea was like the desire, like we don't understand Avodah Zarah anymore. So that desire, when that desire was removed from the world, that thing changed a little bit. Okay, keep on going. We talked about three ways we're similar to angels, and the three way. How are we not? How are we like animals? Shloshik behema, ochlin v'shosin kibehema. We eat and drink like animals. Parin v'ravin kibehema. We procreate like animals. Umotzin rei kibehema. Right, and we go to the bathroom like animals. Kol mistakal ba'arba dvarim. The Gemara goes back to the Mishnah. Right, we spoke about in the Mishnah. Whoever scrutinizes the following four things, rasui lo shelo ba'olam. He is right. It would have been better that he had never been created. Right. What were the three things? What were the four things you talked about? Who remembers? We talked about what is above us, what is below us, what is before us, and what is after us. Right. That's true. Those are the four things we discussed. So now the Gemara says, "Bishlama mala 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 mata mala ocher lachai." But I understand why it's inappropriate to scrutinize what is above, what is below, or what is after us. That's all good. I'm good with that. That makes sense. However, elefanim, right? Regard to what came before, right? What's so bad about inquiring about the past? Why can't we study history? I don't understand the problem with that, right? Mada hava, whatever was. Why it already happened? Why can't we study what happened in the past? The Gemara answers, Rabbi Yochanan, Rebbe Elazar, to Amri Chavai. Rabbi Yochanan and Eliezer both said, Mashal Melech Basav Adam She'amar L'Avdav. He gives a mashal to explain. Right, a king said to his servants, Banuli Paltirin Gedolin Ala Ashba. Right, he said, see this trash heap? See this disgusting garbage dump? Build me a beautiful palace right here. Clean the whole thing up and build me a beautiful palace. Halchu Banulo, they went and they built it for him. And Rotza Shal Melech L'Hazkir Sham Ashba. Every time people visit his palace, imagine every time you went to Disneyland.
There you go.
I said, right, remember when this was disgusting? Smell. Remember when this was a garbage dump? Like, that's not respectful to the king. So too, somehow that mashal is supposed to tell us that it's not, that by all of it trying to scrutinize the past, it's not a good idea. Okay? That's what the Gemara is suggesting. The Gemara cites the next part of the Mishnah, which we spoke about earlier, or you spoke about earlier. Kol shelo chasal kavod kono. Right, whoever has no need for the honor of his creator, for Hashem, rasui lo shelo bal olam. Again, it would have been better that he was never created. My he. Right, what kind of person has no concern for the honor of God? The Gemara presents two different opinions. Rabbi Abba Amar, ze hamistakal bekeshes. Right, this refers to someone who gazes at a rainbow. Rav Yosef Amar Zeha Over Avera Besesa. This refers to someone who does a sin, who commits an Avera in secret. Right? Now we get into this whole conversation of rainbows. I'm not going to lie, I wish I had more clarity. I'm sure there's much more research to do. This whole idea of rainbows, we all have heard this, right? You're not supposed to stare at rainbows?
No.
Okay.
Never heard
that.
What?
Never heard that.
Okay, well, I didn't tell you then.
Lenny,
you'll see here. You'll see here in the Gemara. You have this complicated thing in halacha. Rainbows are the coolest things ever. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
And not only that, we think that and we tell our children that, we have a bracha.
Right.
That's right.
Seeing a rainbow, right?
How can you know?
Right. The problem is you have to know the bracha off by heart, because by the time you go look it up, it's gone. And it's not a simple bracha. It's not like when you say in other things. Right. Bracha Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam. It's a long one, too. Zocher HaBrit, V'ne'eman B'Brito, V'kayam B'ma'amaro. A six-word one. Right, or three phrases. So we have a bracha. So you tell me, don't look at rainbows. But first of all, rainbows remind us that Hashem's not going to destroy the world. So I guess the reason is you're not supposed to look at the rainbow, because then you're like, oh, Hashem would have destroyed the world. Right? It's a kind of depressing thing. It's a positive thing, but it's depressing. Right? But on the other hand, we have a bracha. So there's a kind of like, right? And we want to look.
That whole episode is very misleading.
Very.
Because he will not destroy the world by means of Mabul.
Right.
There was no blanket, wholesale, global settlement.
Okay, I hear you. So what's the story with the rainbows, right? Why, we're saying that whoever has no need for the avarish, it's as if you shouldn't have been one of the pshatim here of people who should have never been created because you have no honor for God, is if you stare at rainbows. The other one is if you sin in secret. I understand that one more. Let's understand the rainbow thing a little bit, but I don't think we'll have perfect understanding. I apologize in advance. Hamistakel b'kesha, someone who gazes at a rainbow, that is somehow impinging. That's not honoring God. Why? D'ksiv kimare hakesha asher hayihye ba'anan b'yom hageshem. Right. It says in the pasuk, like the appearance of a rainbow that would be in the cloud on a rainy day. Ken mara hanoga saviv. So was the appearance of the brilliance all around. This is the appearance of the likeness of the glory of Hashem. Right? This is the idea that since a rainbow is a manifestation of God's glory, one demonstrates a lack of, just like Rabbi Akiva didn't look at that exact point of the most holiness, you're basically looking at Hashem, and that's demonstrating a lack of kavod of Hashem. The Tosfos Rid writes that if you're staring at a rainbow, you cannot know the exact spot where the change of color occurs, right? You don't know exactly where the rainbow starts, where it ends, it's a little fuzzy. So too, he's saying it's an allegory. Maybe it has nothing to actually do with staring at rainbows. It's a mashal that if you try to figure out exact details of Hashem, if you try to understand Hashem exactly, you're never going to succeed, and that's a bad idea. It can lead you to bad philosophical places. And so too, just like you shouldn't try to figure out the exact beginning and end of a rainbow, you should not try to figure out the exact details of the rainbow. So perhaps the Tosfos Rid says, it's not exactly pshat about a rainbow. It's really just an analogy. Some others suggest that maybe the issue is that the staring, right? We know this idea of the histaklos, right? We have this idea as well when it comes to tznias, right? That in Hilchos Tznias, we'll talk about Birkat Kohanim later in the daf. And when it comes to Hilchos Tznias, for example, right? You're not allowed to stare at stuff that isn't tznias. But if you're just walking by, you don't have to walk around the world like closing your eyes. You shouldn't stare. But if you see, okay, you saw.
Don't
right?
be a guy and ogle.
Right, so maybe the idea is the staring at the rainbow as opposed to looking. Again, you have to look to see the bracha, but you shouldn't stare. Some others say maybe you shouldn't contemplate. That has nothing to do with the actual looking, but more like the Tosfos Rid, that it's about thinking about and philosophizing. Okay, what about the second idea? And that's about someone who sins secretly. Rav Yosef Amar Ze Over Avera B'Seisa, right? Rav Yosef has to do with someone who commits an Avera in secret and hiding. Kid Rabbi Yitzchak, and that works with the view of Rabbi Yitzchak. Why? Damn Rabbi Yitzchak. Kol over aver b'seitzer ilu dochek raglei shchina. Whoever sins in secret, Ziffy's pushing away the quote unquote feet of the shchina, of the divine presence. Shina emar ko amar Hashem shamayim kisi. Right, Hashem said that the heaven is my throne. Va'aret hadom raglai, and the earth is my footstool. And a person sin in private because he thinks God's not here. God's up in the sky. God has nothing to do with this world, right? So I can sin quietly, privately here. God's not looking, right? That person has no honor for God. And perhaps that's what the Gemara is getting at. Okay, I got to speed up a little. See, we're falling behind. The Gemara says, Aini, is this really true? That it's right? Is it you're going to say, so I shouldn't sin in secret. What should I do? I should sin publicly. Right? That's better? I don't think so, right? But we all know, don't we know those Gemaras? This famous story about someone else. But if a person sees that his Yetzer Hara is overcoming him, he definitely has to sin. Right? What should he do? He should go to a town where they don't recognize him. He should wear black. He should put on like a black hood. Right? And then he can do whatever his heart desires. Meaning, obviously you can't sin. But if you're going to sin, at least don't make a Chil Hashem out of it. Right? Go somewhere where you're not going to embarrass your people, God, whatever.
Mm-hmm. But after the second time, you'll know who he is.
Oh, there you go. V'al yechal al Shem Shemayim before Hesia, right? Don't publicly desecrate God's name. So what are you telling me? It's bad to sin privately. Are you telling me it's better to sin publicly? No, we know it's not. Right? Rav Ila Zakin said it's not. So the Gemara says, look, Kasha, this is not a problem. It's not a contradiction. It's not a difficulty. Why? This ruling of Rav Yosef, that it's right, which says that sinning with seis or sinning with secret is bad, is worse than public sin. That only applies to a situation in which you have an option not to sin. I mean, you always have an option not to sin, but where you feel in your kishka that you have an option not to sin. If it's not sinning or sinning with seis or in secret, don't sin at all. However, this ruling of Rav Ila Zakin that it's better to sin in secret than sin publicly is where you're unable to hold back, where you're going to end up sinning anyways, so then it's better to do it secretly and go to a different town and wear black and yada yada. Fine. Rav Abba now speaks again about the person who says the about the rainbow. Da'as Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Nachmani, Miturgamani, the Reish Lakish. Right, Rabbi Yehuda, who was the son of Rabbi Nachmani, who was the spokesman of Reish Lakish, he was Doresh, he expounded. Kolam Yistakal B'shosh Tvarim, Einayim Kahos. Whoever looks at these three things, their eyes will go dim, their eyesight will be negatively affected. B'keshes, Ubenasi, V'kohanim. If you look at a rainbow, if you look at a prince, or if you look at Birkas Kohanim, right? Each of these three things have some semblance of the Hashem's glory, of the Kavod HaShemayim, and just like Rabbi Akiva avoids staring at them, we should avoid staring at them also. How do we know? But Keshes, how do you know you shouldn't stare at a rainbow? Dichtiv, Kemara Keshes Ser Yeba Anan Kiyom HaGeshem, the same pasuk we already quoted before. Hu Mara Dmus HaKavod HaShem, that rainbow somehow shows some of the glory of God. How do we know you shouldn't stare at a Nasi? Dichtiv, as it said, V'nasata Mehodecha Alav, right, you shall place some of your majesty upon him. The key there word is some. Mistakal b'kohanim, and when it comes to gazing at kohanim, bizman shebeis hamikdash kayam, she'omdim al duchanan, when the Beis HaMikdash was around, and the kohanim were duchen, mevarchim es Yisrael b'shem ha'mefarash, they would use God's secret name, God's explicit name, to do the when they did the Birkas Kohanim, and the divine presence would rest in between their knuckles. So a few points here.
Can we gaze at Prince Harry?
Oh, there you go. He's not, didn't he
quit? Is he the one who quit?
No, so he's not a prince anymore, so it's all good. All
right.
Right. A few points here. The Maor Ketzia writes that nowadays, the Kohanim don't really have to cover their fingers. Since nowadays, right, I mean, I'm not any Kohanim here? No?
No.
So in the Kohanim, I think they put their hands under their talus, right?
Yes.
And they do their whole, the whole,
Spock
right? Spock thing, right? Spock. Yeah. So if they don't say, they don't say the Shem Meforash, right? And they're not in the base of Migdash, they don't have these two factors, it seems like the Shekhinah doesn't rest between their fingers. So maybe there's no point for their fingers to be under their talus. They don't have to hide the fingers from the talus. And if their fingers are under the talus, then it's probably okay to look anyways, even if it was the Beit HaMikdash, even if it wasn't the Shem HaMeforash, because you're not looking at their fingers. Right, but nonetheless, the minhag is that we're machmir both. Again, people say it's not like you're going to blow up if you look.
No.
Mistakel. If you glance, it's fine. If you happen to see. But don't stare.
Don't stare.
Don't stare. And also, and they cover their fingers anyways.
My favorite thing is the people who turn their backs. That I like. Punim al punim. What's that?
Yeah, you're not supposed to turn your back. That's
not supposed to turn your back.
Oh, no.
The Kohanim?
No.
No.
That's like if I wanted to talk to you and give you a bracha and you turn your back on me.
Yeah, don't do that.
So it's disrespectful.
Right, okay. The Gemara now wants to further expand Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmani's statement. Darash Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Nachmani Meturgame de Reish Lakish. We mentioned this person before. Ma'iksiv, what is the meaning of the pasuk? Al ta'aminu be'rea, al tiv techu ba'aluf. Right, don't trust a friend. Don't rely on an official. Right, the rest of the pasuk says that you should guard the doorways of your mouth from the one who lies in your bosom inside. Sounds like something about Lashon Hara. Im yomer lecha yetzer hara, if your yetzer hara says to you, chato HaKadosh Baruch Hu, chato the Kadosh Baruch Mochel. If your gut, if your yetzer hara says to you, you can sin, don't worry, God will forgive you. You'll do tshuva later. It's all good. Al tamen, don't trust that.
Bad idea.
Shne'emar, al tamen berav in rea el yetzer hara. The pasuk says, don't believe in your rea, and the rea, there's no rea except for yetzer hara. Shne'emar, ki yetzer lav ha'adam ra. Now the pasuk says in Bereishis that I think it's Bereishis that our true inclination, this is a philosophical machlokas for another time, but according to this pasuk our true inclination is always to evil, and therefore we should not listen to it. Ve'ein aluf el HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, and there's no aluf, there's no master of the universe. I mentioned this in the drasha on Shabbos that aluf in Hasidic thought refers to the aluf shel olam. There's no aluf, there's no ruler other than God. Shenamar aluf ne'urei ata, you God of the master. Aloof of my youth. Shema tomar mi ma'idbi. Perhaps you'll ask, who's going to testify me if I sin in the privacy of my house? No one's going to see. No one. There's no edim, right? I'm going to be fine. Avne beso. The stones of your house will testify against you. The koros beso shel adam. And the beams of your house will testify you. Hem ma'idim bo. They will testify you. Shene emar ki evin makir tizak uchapis me'etz ye'anena. The pasuk says, the pasuk in Chabakuk says, for the stone will cry out from the wall and the chip from the beam will testify to it. Meaning, Hashem is everywhere. Don't think no one's looking. Right? That's what the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Va'ayin Roa. Right? Ve'ozen Shomat, that God has a watchful eye and a listening ear. The Gemara presents other opinions regarding this last one. V'chachamim omrim, nishmaso shel adam me'ida bo, that a person's soul will testify against him. Shene emar, pasuk from Micha, misho cheves, chekecha, shemor pischei picha. Right, the guard of your doorways of your mouth. That was the end of the pasuk we saw. For the one who lies in your bosom, what lies inside you? Ezohi davar sheshocheves b'cheiko she'adam. What lies inside a person? Havei omer zo neshama. That's your neshama. Rabbi Zrika omer shnei malchai sharas malav dino. So Rabbi Zrika says that two ministering angels, walk beside you in the hand me'idim bo, and they testify against you. Shnei amar ki melachav yitzev elecha ushmarcha b'chol drachecha, and he will charge his angels concerning you to observe you in all your ways. V'chachamim omerim, and the chachamim say, Ivarav shall adim ma'idim bo, that the limbs of your body will testify against you. Shenemar v'tem edai ne'um Hashem v'ani kel, that you are my witnesses, the words of Hashem, I am God. Okay, although some cryptic gemaras for you to consider. Back to Maseches Chagiga.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Mishnah says, the Mishnah now returns to the subject matter of the beginning of the perek. Again, you'll have to help me out here, I wasn't there. But we talked about earlier about the korban that we bring on Yom Tov. I think we call that the korban Chagiga. Right? And so all private korbanot, right, with the exception of the korban of the Bechor, the korban of the Meiser, and a korban Pesach, have a halacha that you have to do smicha. Smicha does not mean to become a rabbi. Smicha means to lean on the korban. Right? You have to physically put your weight on the korban before you shecht it. Right? You lean on it, the smicha. It's part of one of the requirements in the shechita process. And therefore, the following mission discusses whether or not you can do smicha on yontif. Rabbi Yosef ben Yoezer, Omer, shelo lismach. Rabbi Yosef ben Yoezer says we don't do smicha. Rabbi Yosef ben Yochanan, Omer lismach. Rabbi Yosef ben Yochanan says we do. I don't really have to translate this. Yeshua ben Prachi, Omer, shelo lismach. Nita Harabeli, Omer lismach. Yehuda ben Tabai, Omer, shelo lismach. Shimon ben Shechtech, Omer lismach. Shmaya, Omer lismach. Avtalion Omer, shelo lismach. Hillel Menachem did not fight about this matter. Yatza Menachem, but then Menachem left. This is the only time in Shas Menachem is mentioned. Nichnas Shammai. Then Hillel's famous bar plukta came in. Shammai. What did he say? Obviously the opposite. Shammai Amar Shelo Lismach. Hillel Amar Lismach.
Things have not changed.
Right? So that we had five sets of people having machlokas about this. And now the Mishnah ends off by telling us who's who in each machlokas. Harishonim hayu nesim, v'hashneim lahem avos beistin. In every machlokas, the first Mr. A was the nasi, was the head of the beistin, and Mr. B was the av beistin. Right, and then it was nasi av beistin, nasi av beistin, nasi av beistin.
The way it was just mentioned.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a machlokas with five people saying the same thing before? No. So why are there so many shitas? You should just know that you were zocha to learn what Rashi says here. Look at Rashi. Rashi says here on the Mishnah, if I can find it. Where is this Rashi? I think it's Rashi on the next stuff. No. Rashi.
I think it's on the other daf.
It's on the other daf. Right, the last Rashi here.
Up a little bit.
Rashi says here. Yes, and if you Rashi says here, Mishnah, Yossi ben Yoezer Omer Shlo Lismoch, Beyomtev, Vezohi Machlokis Rishona Shehaisach Achamei Yisrael. Rashi says this is the first machlokis that was ever discussed amongst the rabbis. Right, so what does that mean? And then listen, we know there were machloksim already in Tanakh. We know there are all sorts of machloksim. But what Tosfos explains is that the first machlokis that lasted for a long time. It's the first machlokis that was not easily resolved right away. And therefore, they put down all these opinions, because this is really like a fundamental machlokas. It's one of the first time we have machlokas that doesn't get resolved. And so it's monumental, so they write down a lot of opinions about it. So now the Gemara is going to discuss it. Right? According to the Mishnah, what the Mishnah is establishing, Now, the Gemara actually doesn't discuss the Machlokas at all. It discusses this last point. We had the Mishnah had posited that each A is a Nasi, and each B is an Av Beis Din. Is that really true? So now the Gemara is going to discuss that for quite some time. Tanu Rabbanan, Shlosha Mizugos HaRishonim She'amru Lismoch. The first three stages, well, we're not going to get too much into the details here. If you want, you can draw a chart for yourself later. But the first three stages, again, we said we had the same Machlokas five times. In Machlokas A, in Machlokas B, in Machlokas C, the first one mentioned, who said, don't do smicha, who was Yosef ben Yoezer, who was Yeshua ben Pracha, who was Yehuda ben Tabai, umishnayim azugos achronim shamru lismoch, and the two sages of Machlokas D and E, right, who said that you should do smicha, who was Shmai and Hillel, hayu nesiim. They were the nesiim. Ushnayim lahem avos beistin. And the second one, each of those pairs, Yosef ben Yochan, Nitai Arbele, Shimon ben Shetach, Avtal and Shmai, they were the av beistin. Di Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, av beistin. But the Chacham say, no, Yehud ben Tabai was an Abbasin, and Shimon ben Shetach was a Nasi. Okay, so without getting into the details here too much, because we're going to confuse ourselves, we had originally suggested that A, and A are the Nasi, and B, are the Abbasin, and now the opinion is coming and saying, no, according to the first Shita, A, B, and B, those are the Nasis, and B, A, and A, those are the Abbasin. So it's not as glad as you thought it was. But Chacham, right? So we'll see which one's right. But the Chachamim say, no, we're really going to discuss here the real crux of the Machlokas comes down to Yehuda ben Tabai. Was he a Nasi, i.e. the first in command, or was he an Avesin, was he second in command? Right? The Bryce is going to try to figure out, was Yehuda ben Tabai the Rosh or the Skan? Man Tana Lehu, the Tanu Rabbanan, right? Who is the Tana who taught the following Brysa? Tanu Rabbanan, Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, right? Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, he's our man of the hour. Ere ben Nechama, may I see consolation? Im lo haragti eid zomem, right? If I did not execute an eid zomem for testifying falsely, lehotzi mi liban shel tzedukim shaya omrim ein eidim zomim nehargim ad shehargu hanidon. Okay, what's going on here? It's a little bit complicated. For those who have learned Maseches Makos, an eid zomem is a kind of complicated topic. An eid zomem is, let's say, witnesses A and B come and say they saw Shimon kill Reuven. Shimon steal from Reuven, right? What Eid Zomem is if witnesses C and D show up and they say, we have no idea if Shimon killed Reuven or not. But we know that we were at the movies with A and B
last night.
We know that A and B are lying. We don't know if... We know that A and B can't be testifying because they weren't there. They say they saw Shimon kill Reuven at Young Israel on Tuesday night. We were with the movies with A and B on Tuesday night at the same time, so it could be Shimon killed Reuven at Young Israel. We have no clue. But we know that A and B are not real witnesses. They're Eide Zomim. They're making it up. Mm-hmm. So with the Tzedukim and the punishment, right? What the Torah says is Asher Zamam, right?
False witness.
They're not... False witness is a bad translation because false means they're lying, right? They're false insofar as they weren't there. The whole chap is they could be what they're saying coincidentally is true. Could be they heard a rumor that Shimon killed Reuven, and it is true. But, so there could be that their words are the truth, but they don't have the right to say it because they weren't there. We know they weren't there because they were with us somewhere else. So, the Torah says, what do you do to Edim Zomim? Asher Zamam. Whatever they, if they said Shimon killed Reuven, and therefore why they hate Shimon and they want Shimon to get the death penalty for killing Reuven, then we give the death penalty to A and B. If they say Shimon stole from Reuven because they want Shimon to be financially hurt, then we make the Edim Zomim pay whatever they were trying to do falsely, we apply to them. So the Tzedukim said, obviously the Tzedukim are not our tradition, the Tzedukim said, we only apply this punishment to them if they were successful. If they say Shimon killed Reuven, and then we listen to their testimony, and we kill Shimon, and then we find out they were Zomim, then we kill them. But if we catch them before the punishment was carried out, the Tzedukim said, you don't give them the punishment. And the rabbi said, no, the opposite. The rabbi is actually the opposite. If, unfortunately, we killed Shimon inappropriately based on testimony, now we find out they're Eidim Zomim, we actually don't kill them anymore. Because they're already done. It's already done. It's a drush on the pasuk there. It's a share. I forget the drush offhand. It's like what they wanted to do, but what they actually did. So if it actually happened, we can't actually punish them as much anymore.
Why?
So,
because they now benefit. They got the benefit of their wrongdoing.
There weren't...
Counterintuitive, but that's how they darshan the pasuk.
How many death penalties actually were given?
Not a lot.
But
wait, I don't want to get. We're very far from original topic here, but that's how Gemara works. So What he is saying here, so that's the concept of Edom Zomim. It's a little fast. If you didn't chop, I apologize. And that's the machlokas in the Tzedukim and the Chachamim about Edom Zomim. Right. But what does that have to do with our sugya? Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai said he wanted to fight against this incorrect position of the Tzedukim, and therefore he was willing to punish one of two Edom Zomim without punishing the other. Even though really the halacha is, both. It's two or none. Yeah. Right? If you say, if A and B say Shimon killed Reuven, and you say, no, I know that A was with me at the Hard Rock last night, but I don't know anything about B, then they can't be Edom Zomim. You have to do both of them at the same time. Or at least for punishment, you have to do both at the same time. But this guy, Yehuda ben Tabai, was willing to punish one without punishing both. Amar lo Shimon ben Shetach, Erebe Nachama, Im lo Shefach Tadam Naki. Right? He said that you have shed innocent blood, basically. Shari Amru Chachamim, Ein Edom Zomim Neharagim, Ad Shizimu Shnehem. We don't kill the Edom Zomim unless we can prove that both of them are Edom Zomim. If one of them was, we might puzzle their Edus. We might say you can't testify, but we're not going to punish them unless we have both of them. Again, this is all biblical drushas, right? And therefore, because Yehuda ben Tabai killed one, or was willing to kill one, right? I think the Gemara is mashma that he actually did carry it out. He killed one without killing the other. Someone else is saying that was a huge mistake, and you have to do tshuva for that. And looking at Shizimu Shneim, and again, if the Edom Zomim were trying to get Malkos for Shimon for something he did to Reuven and it was really fake, then we give lashes to the Edom Zomim. But again, we don't do it unless both of them are proven to be Zomim. The Ein Mishalmi Mamon Ad Shizimu Shneim, we don't make them pay unless both of them are proven to be Zomim. Right? And so since the single witness was executed by Yehuda ben Tabi, right, because he'd only proven one of the two Zomim, he should not have been executed. So therefore, Yehuda ben Tabi made a big mistake. He basically killed an innocent man. Or at least, he didn't follow the proper procedures. Even if he wasn't innocent, he didn't have procedural permission to go ahead and kill them. Miyad kiba lav Yehuda ben Tabi, she'eno more halacha ela mipnei Shimon ben Shetach. Yehuda ben Tabi then accepted upon himself that he made a mistake. He felt terrible, and he said, I'm never going to rule halacha unless I'm in the presence of Shimon ben Shetach. So that Shimon ben Shetach would be able to correct any mistake that he might want to make. Okay, what does any of this have to do with what we said? Kol yamav shel Yehuda ben Tabai hayamish mishtateach al kivro shel osa harog. And therefore, for the rest of his, now we're on another, we're on a tangent of a tangent of a tangent. Now Yehuda ben, we're going to come back. Right. Yehuda ben Tabi now would spend the rest of his life going to the kever of this guy who he killed without proper procedure and begging forgiveness and crying. And he would prostrate himself on that man's grave and he would beg for forgiveness. Vayakola nishma, and his voice was heard. Kisvurina am lomar, and he would cry so much that people would walk by and say, Shakulo shela harughu. They thought it was the wrongly executed man's voice crying out from the grave. Right? Uh-huh. Quite an odd thing. Amar lahem kolihu, and he said, Yehuda ben Tabi said, no, it's not the deceased man crying, it's my voice. I'm the one who's crying because I killed him inappropriately. Amar lahem kolihu. Right, Tedu, and how are you going to know? How do we know who's right? I don't know. Just listen; it should be obvious who's right. But for some reason, he said, "How am I going to prove my point?" Shela Achar Humeis Ve'en Kol Anishma. You're going to recognize this because tomorrow, whatever in the future, Yehuda ben Tabi will die, and then you'll see you won't hear the voice anymore. Right? Now we continue out the tangent of the tangent of the tangent of the tangent. Amar Rav Acha Brei de Rava le Rav Ashi Dilma Piusei Paisa. Maybe it's not a proof. Maybe the fact that Yehuda ben Tabi is going to die and you're not going to hear the voice anymore doesn't mean the voice was Yehuda ben Tabi's the whole time. Maybe it means that he was finally forgiven. And therefore, the deceased in the grave is no longer going to cry out because his begging for mercy worked. Maybe he went up to Shemayim with him and they had a conversation about it and he finally forgived him. Right? So maybe it's not a proof at all. So, the Gemara says no, it's going to try to prove that it did work. How? Minaha. Sorry, I skipped over. Or Bedina Tave, right? Or because Yehuda ben Tabi is going to die and he's going to get summoned to justice in Shemayim, and therefore the deceased is going to feel like his aggressor was properly prosecuted and he's going to stop crying out from the grave. Okay, rewinding back four tangents ago, Maniha, who is the author of this whole brisa, right? Iyamar Tabishlama Rabbi Meir. Right, again, we talked about in our beginning of the Gemara. We said we had the Machlokas Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim about whether the A or the B's were all Nasiim or all of Beis Din. Fine.
Right.
If we say, if you say it's Rabbi Meir, then it's all fine and dandy. The Amar Shimon ben Shetach Av Beis Din, because Rabbi Meir says that Shimon ben Shetach was the Av Beis Din, Rabbi ben Tabi was a Nasi, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Nasi, Yehuda ben Tabai was a Nasi. Hainu, the Kama Mori Halacha b'fnei b'Shimon ben Shetach, and that explains why Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabi, he was allowed to make whatever halachas he wanted, because the Nasi is more chashuv than the Beis Din, and therefore, Ila Ayam Arta Rabbanan. And therefore, when he changes his mind, he says, oh yeah, I messed up. Now I'm no longer going to rule without Shimon ben Shetach. He's saying, I was number one. I could do whatever I want. But I see I messed up. I'm going to basically revert to number two now. Or I'm going to only rule halacha when number two is around. Because I want to check and balance. I want to make sure that I don't mess up again. And that makes sense. So if you read that whole Gemara, that whole Braisa we just read about Yehuda ben Tabi, it all makes sense if you view him as the number one. And he made a mistake, so now he's going to put a number two upon himself. However, and now it's even Rabbi Meir. However, if you say the Chachamim are right? Ella, Iyamar to Rabbanan, if you say that the Braisa should follow the Rabbanan, to Amar Yehuda ben Tabi Av Basin, Shiva Meshendach Nachsi, who says that Yehuda ben Tabi was the number two guy the whole time. And right? Then you have a shayla. Av Beis Din mifnei nasi maimor halacha. How could it be that Yehuda ben Tabi executed one of the Eden Zomim without the other? How could he have made this procedural mistake? He had no right to be in charge. He wasn't the nasi. Where was the nasi? Where was number one? And how could his tshuva be, oh, I'm only going to do it with the number one? Well, I guess one answer could be, he did something inappropriate. The number two ruled without the number one. He said, now I'm going to be more makpid to make sure I have the number one with me. Right? So that's what the Gemara says. Lo! No, the Braisa could well follow the Rabbanan, right? That Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabi was number two and not number one. Accordingly, even before the incident, Yehuda ben Tabi never ruled on matters in the presence. He messed up, right? Ma'i kiba alav kamar. And what does it mean he took upon himself? Leads to Rufe to join in sitting on a court. That feels Rufe nami lamistarfa. For that is, he declared that going forward, he will not even join in sitting in court unless Shimon ben Shetach is there, meaning that he ruled by himself as the number two before, and now he's being saying, I'll only rule if I have the number one. All right, we're almost done. Now going back to the Mishnah. Yatza Menachem v'nichna Shammai. Right, the Mishnah said that Menachem left, and Shammai came in, and Shammai started debating with Hillel. The Gemara inquires, L'heichan Yatza? Where did Menachem go? Abai Amar Yatza L'tarbus Ra'a. He went to join a bad society. Rav Amar Yatza la'avod la'avdus hamelech. He went to serve the king. He went to serve the king. So what exactly does that mean? The Ben Yehoyada suggests that this is, sorry, we'll get there in a second. Both of them, it doesn't sound like a very good thing, right? I mean, it doesn't say that. It could be they both mean the same thing. Rava Amar, Yatza la'avdus ha-melech. He went to serve the king. Tanai nami hachi. Another way to say the bride, Yatza menachem la'avdus ha-melech. He went to be in the service of the king. V'yatzu imo shimonas zugim. Talmidei levushim sirikun.
It says Herod that, in the notes.
That he went to serve Herod, the king. Okay? That 80 pairs of disciples dressed in royal garb left after him. That's where Menachem went. Seems like he went off the derech or went to do something that wasn't the best idea.
He left the Sanhedrin.
Right, that he left the Sanhedrin. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Gemara elaborates further on this dispute of smicha, right? Actually trying to talk about some halacha regarding Maseches Chagiga, going full circle hill. Amar Rab Shemen Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, La'olam al tiyashvus kala be'enecha, never let a rabbinic prohibition concerning Shabbos or Yontif seem minor in your eyes. Right, we have that same idea. In Pirkei Avos, right? In Pirkei Avos, we say we don't know the schar of a big mitzvah compared to a smart mitzvah. We don't know the schar of a light mitzvah compared to a heavy mitzvah. And therefore, we should take every mitzvah seriously. And Rabbeinu Yonah is a very famous comment on Pirkei Avos. I see we're running late, so I'll be fast. That when the Torah says Asu Mishmeres L'Mishmarti, right, the Torah tells us that you have to make a guard. You have to set up a fence, right? And so Rabbeinu Yonah says that's extremely important and beautiful statement. And therefore, Rabbeinu Yonah actually argues that every mitzvah derabanan, people say, oh, that's only a derabanan. Rabbeinu Yonah argues that every derabanan is really deraisa. Why? Because every derabanan has the derabanan aspect of it. And then the Torah says, listen to the rabbis. So every time you do a derabanan, you're also fulfilling the deraisa of listening to the rabbis. Or violate it, you're violating the deraisa of not listening to the rabbis. Right? In the beginning of that great Hilchos Shabbos book, the Thelamat HaMelachos, Rav Ribbia has a beautiful mashal. He writes, let's say you're stuck in traffic, right? And you see up ahead a police car, right? And you're like so annoyed, why the heck did this police car stop in the middle of the street like they often do? Can't they just pull off, pull the guy for the speeding ticket, go to the side street, and you get closer and you closer and you see the police car is blocking a huge pothole. And you're like, okay, thank God, right? Otherwise, I would blow my tire. I could ruin my transmission. So that's what a derabanan is, right? We think derabanans are annoying. They're in the way. They're clumsy. No, they're stopping us from falling into potholes. They're stopping us from falling into deraisas. And that's why we have so many of them. So that's why he says here, this comment, we should not take any derabanans lightly. Sharei smicha eina ela mishum shvus. This whole concept of smicha on the korban is only, whatever that means, a din deraisa. V'nachlechu ba gdolei hador. And look, five generations of gedolim had a machlokus about, quote-unquote, only a derabanan. So we should not take derabanans lightly. They're quite serious. The Gemara asks, Shita, getting back to the actual crux of the halacha, finishing off, is it obvious that smicha is only a derabanan, right? Why does Rabbi Yochanan emphasize that it was nothing more than this? The Gemara shvus mitzvah itzarichle. He needs to tell us that the rabbis were busy fighting over this halacha of Shabbos that forbid, right? Because that forbid activities that are otherwise the performance of a mitzvah. What does that mean? It means that the rabbis prohibited performing certain activities on Shabbos and Yom Tov, even though their performance fulfills a mitzvah. For example, smicha, right? To put this point into focus, Rav Yochanan states that although smicha is buying nothing more than a shvus, it's not performed in Yom Tov. That even though smicha is part of the mitzvah of shchita, nonetheless, we can still temper it down. The other Gemara says, "My nami pshita," but that's also obvious. What do you mean this is also obvious? This gets a little complicated here, but basically, some say that smicha is only necessary on a voluntary shlamim, not on an obligatory shlamim, and a korban chagiga is obligatory, is mandatory, is a chiyuv, and therefore, some say, we don't need smicha anyways. Say, no, kamash malan, that you need that mandatory korban also needs smicha. So now we get into the last point. Lapuke memand amar besmicha gufa plige. Rav Yochanan's purpose of saying that it was to negate the view of one who says that the above requirement of smicha itself, that they, right, that the pairs listed in the Mishnah that they disagreed. What's going on here? Kamash malan v'shvus hu depligi. Rav Yochanan therefore informs us that they disagreed about the applicability of this mitzvah derabanan concerning Shabbos. The Gemara discusses the nature of this act of smicha. Okay, finishing off. Amar Rabbi bar Chama, shma mina smicha bekol chocho be'inyan. We learned earlier that when you do smicha, you have to do it with all your strength. You have to push on the animal as hard as you can, right? But we have a problem with that, because we learned elsewhere that, you know, just like you're not allowed to hang on a tree on Shabbos, right? You're not allowed to use a tree, and we even know you're not allowed to use, I forget what the Lashon is in Hebrew, but you're not allowed to use like a tolda of a tree. Like if you put a nail into a tree, you're not allowed to like hang your hat on that tree or your suit jacket on that tree. Oh, so that would be a problem on Shabbos. So what they say though is you could do a second degree, meaning if you have a hammock and a hammock is attached to a nail, and that nail is attached to a tree, and that was all set up before Shabbos, then that's kosher. If it's two steps removed from the actual tree, then it's fine. If it's one step removed, it's a problem on Shabbos. Because you're worried that it's like a gezerah, Shema you'll come to break off something from the tree. So it seems like maybe the same thing applies to animals as well. That you can't use you can't use the animal or, quote-unquote, a part of the animal. What does that mean? The whole animal is one thing. So he says here, Rabbi Bar Chama said, Shema mina smicha b'chol kocha b'ina. We have to use all of one's strength. If you would think you don't have to use all your strength, my ka'avid. Then what is he doing here? What What is he doing when he performs smicha that violates the rabbinic prohibition? Lismuch, let him indeed perform smicha on yontif, and just he won't press down as hard as he can, and therefore. Right, what's the problem with smicha, basically? The problem with smicha is the same issue with the tree. If you have to push down on the animal with all your weight, then you're basically relying on the animal for stability. Mm-hmm. Your feet are basically not on the ground, or basically useless. The ground's not supporting you, the animal's supporting you. And so if the animal's supporting you, then you're using the animal, and you're not allowed to do that. Right? So say, and if you tell me, then I'll just touch him. I'll go like this. I'll still have 97% of my weight on the floor, and I'll go like this. Right? Then I'm not using the animal. My hands are just on it. right? No, that doesn't count as smicha. So it must be that smicha needs to be with all your weight. And that's why it's a problem on Shabbos, according to the ones who say it's a problem. It's a problem because you're saying you're not using all your weight. Okay, let's see if we can finish off here. Meisvei, they challenge this. Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'samach. The Torah says, speak to the children of Israel, right? When they bring a korban, they have to do smicha. They have to lean on it. B'nei Yisrael somchin v'ein b'nos Yisrael somchos. Right, the Gemara learns it's only for men, it's not for women. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Omrim, this is some politically incorrect Gemaras. B'nos Yisrael somchos v'shus. So one Shita says that women cannot do it, and one says they could do it if they want, but they don't have to. Rabbi Yossi, sachli Abba Elazar. Abba Elazar recounted to me the following incident. Pamachas hayalanu egel shel ziv chay shlamim. We had a cow that we were going to bring up as a korban shlamim. V'havi unu le'ezras nashim. And they brought it into the women's courtyard of the base of Migdash. V'samchol ad nashim. And the women did smicha. Lo b'vnei shesmicha b'nashim. And you should not learn for this. That is because women are obligated in smicha. El k'dei la'asos nachas ruach le'nashim. But in order to pacify them, in order to satisfy them, in order to keep them happy, they wanted to feel part of it. So we said, sure, you want to do this, you think this looks fun, you think this is cute, go ahead. No problem. Right? It doesn't sound so nice, but that's what they said, that's what they did. Now if you want to tell me you need to do smicha with all your weight, would we permit performing work with a consecrated item in order to give satisfaction to the women? He says there's a halachic problem here. If you want to tell me that we let the women do smicha as a rishus, and you also tell me smicha involves putting all your weight on the animal, right? We know it's forbidden to do extra work with a kodesh animal, right? And so how are you going to tell me that the women were able to put all their weight on it? Because one who leans down on an animal with all their strength supports their weight on it and is therefore considered, quote-unquote, working the animal, and you're not allowed to work a kodesh animal. Now, we can do it because it's part of the process.
How is it considered working the animal? I mean, you're not getting what's the benefit from it? The sacrifice? The definition of benefit, I mean, working it.
Yeah, let's just finish the Gemara. We're almost done. It's late. But I hear you. They consider it. It's consider you're using
okay.
It. So he says, Ella love shman mina. Rather, don't learn from this. Lo b'inen b'kol kocho. It must be that the smicha does not need to be with all one's strength. That's a proof. No, he said, no. La'olam emalacha b'inen kol kocho. No, in fact, I would say to you that smicha does have to be with all one's strength. So how do we let the women do it if they're not allowed to work the animal? Ta'amar lu akfu yadaichu. They were told to rest their hands lightly on the head of the animal since the women aren't doing smicha halachically anyways. It's just to give them nachas ruach. It's really just pretend. So let them do it. Let them fulfill their pretend obligation in a pretend way. Just touch it. You know, like when you let your kids shake lulav. You don't care if they shake it the right way. Whatever, just do whatever. Right. You know, make yourselves happy. It's not so polite, but that's what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara challenges, Ihechi, if so, if the women only performed, it's like a token smicha, right? It's like throwing them a bone. Then, lo mipnesha smicha benashim. Then does Abba Elazar need to explain that what was done, not because there was smicha requirement for women, but merely to give satisfaction to women? Tipu gled in a smicha klal. Right, let him base his explanation. Let him say that no, there's no smicha at all for women. The Gemara answers, Amar Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami said, Chadav od kamar, for one thing and for another. What does that mean? Rabbi Lezer was really saying as follows: Chadav the leis smicha klal. Do not conclude from this incident that a woman's obligated in smicha, because for one thing, it was not a true smicha at all. And for another thing, even if it was done, it wasn't done. It was only done in order to, you know, throw them a token, give them satisfaction, they were being part of the mitzvah. But, however, they weren't really doing it the real way. Amar Rav Papa, finishing the daf, Shmamina, Tzadidin Asurin. Learn from this statement of Rav Yochanan that this, just like we said, this is putting a nail on the tree, you're also not allowed to use the nail. So too, you're not allowed to use quote unquote the side of the animal. For if you want to say that you can use the side of the animal, let him perform the smicha on the animal's head, and the head is not considered. It's considered just like it's. I don't know. It's weird. A nail is considered like. A nail is obviously not part of the tree. You think the head of the animal would be part of the animal, but they're suggesting no. Maybe the head of the animal is not considered part of the animal. It's on the side, and therefore elah lav shmamina. Tzadidin asurin. No, so tzadidin are also asur. You can't use the side, and therefore that's also problematic. Finishing off, now we're on to Yud Zayin, which is finishing off. Rav Ashi Amar, afilu tema tzadidin mutarin, even if you want to say, quote-unquote, that the side, the head of the animal is like the side, if you want to say that would be mutar du smicha on, Called the Bahi Gaba Kigaba Dami, right? Whatever is on the level with the back is treated as the same as its back. And therefore, the back of the animal and the head of the animal saying it's all the same. And therefore, the Isser of using an animal of Yontif applies to the head, applies to the back. And so you can't get around this Isser of Smicha by saying you'll use the head instead of the side.
So you have to do...